Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. We're going up until 2 o'clock today. I'm David Ellis, and well, what am I going to start off with today? I'm going to flash back to something that happened over the weekend, and we carried a piece on it this morning in Sagicor's Early Business. And I'm going to replay what was said then, and I hope that we can get some examination of exactly what is going on when it comes to business that is being conducted on some of our beaches in this country. The person that we heard from this morning is Stephen Williams, a concerned citizen.
He says he went to Pebbles Beach with his family this weekend and left very worried about the attitude that some business people are displaying to those who want to use our beaches.
When we got there, we all decided, well, look, let's rent a beach chair and a tent because, well, you know, we want to protect the food and whatever else. And I wanted a rest because I didn't feel like going in the water, but I was there with family and friends. So I requested a beach chair from one of the local vendors who said I had to set up in his, I don't know, 20 feet in any direction spot, something like that. I don't know the exact figure, but he had two tents set. He had two umbrellas set up to actually demarcate where he can rent to. I said, well, okay, my family is further down towards Radisson, so, you know, could he set up there? He said, no, he has a specific designated spot or it's an issue. He has a license. So I figured, okay, well, you know, that was a little weird to me because it was not even that far from where he was unable to rent. But he said that that is the license he has to actually work with. So I said, okay, so where do I go? He said, well, you have to ask one of these other two people there. You had to ask, I think it's Barbados Cruising something. I call it Dippers, but it's not Dippers apparently. But it's a compound, like almost between where he can rent and Radisson. And when I asked there, I said, well, no, I can only rent to you Monday to Friday and not on a weekend. I said, well, can this guy still serve me? No, because this is our spot. So I said, I went over to Radisson. Basically, Radisson saying they only rent or give beach chairs out to their actual hotel guests. So I'm saying this is ridiculous. Because in a time where people want money, why would you be refusing to give people service? And on top of that, the appearance is Bajans to one side and then guests and visitors to another side. It looked like segregation. And I'm saying it is ridiculous at a time where not just Bajans want money, but the appearance that you have a specific spot for certain people. And again, why would you want Bajans pack up or not spread out? This is still COVID. And I'm saying, isn't that the hotel full of guests? And therefore, you know, you want to know protect your guests from not being able to get service. I get that. So if the hotel was full, right, and you have to reserve the chairs for your guests and out in front where your hotel is full, I get that. But this is not regular, unusual times. Our businesses have to adapt. We have an impracticality about how we do business and how we see things.
He says people have told him he should carry his own umbrella and chair.
How is it that we have become so impractical in this country? And I don't want to raise the R word about racism. I don't think it's that. Not for a second. I think that we have an impracticality when it comes to Barbados and Barbadians and how we do business. We got to evolve. We got to adapt. And it's systematic. It's a cultural, systematic thing. Cultural from the perspective that Bajans feel, oh, Stephen, what were you upset for? What is this now big issue? Carry your own things. If we don't adapt, we will die. If we don't see the bigger picture on issues and start being so small-minded and small-eyed, when we see something, we see it with tunnel vision, we will die because something will come behind you and eat you. I can't get Bajans to understand that sometimes it is just not about turning the other cheek and going the other way, but calling things out is wrong. That guy lost the sale yesterday, and two businesses refused my money because of a little fabricated demarcation line. There was nothing in the sand that the NCC put up and said spot one or spot two. It was a arbitrary line drawn for purposes of comfort, to ensure that, as somebody put it on the same post, that nobody don't get bring a cutlass over business.
Okay, so what exactly is happening here on this beach? And how is this business being conducted on this beach? There are a couple of things that are happening in this country that are really flying in the face of what is considered to be reasonable. It's a big challenge. Wherever you look, you can see the evidence before you. And something has to be done about it. We have to talk about it. We have to expose it wherever it happens. And we have to say that Barbados must change. If you don't change it, then you are going to create an environment that nobody wants. What are your thoughts? Those of you who are using the beaches and are confronting this, why are you keeping your mouth shut? Why don't you expose it? What do you have to lose? Call me and tell me. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Welcome, sir.
How are you?
I'm okay.
It's the first time I've called, and I'd always said that I only call when I think that something is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to speak this morning to you about a case that was talked about or related in the newspaper over the weekend, and it goes back to a family looking for justice in a case where Warrant Sergeant was killed on President Kennedy Drive last year by Dwayne Till.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was the driver who struck the other guy, the man on the bicycle.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, I am his brother. So I'm the last person that saw him alive, and I'm the first person that saw him dead in the family. Not a pretty picture. My brother's spine was severed in three places, and his neck was broken in two. My brother was sent through the air, and he landed beside the garbage dump on President Kennedy Highway. There were some young men along the street who ran to his assistance because they thought that he would have lived. And they were gracious enough to put a couple of garbage bags under his head, but they still believe that he's going to live. I want to thank them for that. But what really bothers me is this. How can any one person kill another person in such a vicious manner? And he walks away with a $400 fine and a 9 month driver's suspension.
Okay, well, let's put this in perspective based upon what I've seen here in the newspaper. A lot of this has to do with legal process. And the legal process is that this man was charged and convicted at one level in connection with this matter. They said here, more than a year, Tull is not required to answer the more serious charge of causing Sergeant's death by dangerous driving. He pleaded guilty last November to the lesser charges brought against him by police for driving without due care and attention and driving without reasonable consideration for others using the road. Last week, the upgraded charge of causing Sergeant's death by dangerous driving brought against Tull in March was withdrawn by the Director of Public Prosecutions. After successful argument by his legal counsel, it was determined that the upgraded charge was based on the same facts for which Tull had already pleaded guilty and had been punished. Tull was fined $400 and had his driver's license suspended for 9 months. And it was said that this ruling had opened the Pandora's box for the Crown in similar cases. This is what went wrong with this case for you as the family of Mr. Sargent. The process which was followed by those who brought the charges before the court put you in this, a situation where, as far as you were concerned, The more serious charge should have been the one that Mr. Tull would have faced. Now, those are the facts as we understand it. And we also understand how you feel.
But you see, what really bothers us as a family is that we know a person's going to Carlin Supermarket, stealing a bottle of rum, a tin of sardines, and two packs of crackers. Goes to court, he was caught for stealing, goes to court, and he's placed in prison for less 3 months because he can't pay the fine. My feeling is this. How can the police be so incompetent? Well, seeing the charge, well, and understanding what goes on, and he could just pay $400.
But you know, while I really understand the pain that you as a brother and other people will face, the other reality of this is that this was considered an accident. It was not considered to be something that was premeditated. It's not like some of the other incidents that we have to deal with in this country. And I think in all of this, while you're disappointed at the process, also bear in mind the fact that it was an accident. How do you respond to that?
But tell me something.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have an accident where a person was killed? I mean, I will tell you this. Let me explain something to you. When I got to the accident, when the police called and I got to the accident today, I picked up my brother's right foot shoe. About 20 feet from where he landed. My brother's bicycle seat was sitting on top of his car. The front end of Mr. Tull's vehicle was detached. When the guy from MTW came to the police with my brother's bicycle, he said to the police, "This here is the point of impact."
Yes.
So he catapulted through the air.
Understood.
Now, $400 and 9 months?
Well, we have, first of all, I think you accept in all of this that it was an accident, but also at the end of the day, you are concerned that the way that this accident occurred, circumstances in your judgment do not merit the outcome. And I think there are many people who may share that view. There are others who will say, but at the end of the day, the authorities assessed the situation and concluded that it was an accident. Unfortunately, you don't feel that you got the kind of justice that was required, but unfortunately, it seems as though this is where it will have to remain. I don't know to what extent, coming out of this, you believe there is a need for change. And if you do believe that there is a need for change, what would you call for? We also have to, we cannot try this case twice, you know? And we cannot get into details that really are details that should have been before the court. Now, I'm trying to recognize that you are in a state of pain and you feel that there is a sense of injustice in the way that this has gone on. And there are people who share your view that the process was flawed and it is unfortunate that it has happened. But, sir, there is only so much that we can do as it relates to this, based upon the process that has been employed. And I'm really sorry for your pain. And, you know, I have followed this case to a large extent. I knew Mr. Sargent by seeing him because I grew up in St. Stephen's Hill and walked through Wavell Avenue and Cleaverdale and those places. I always saw him there over the years. So we share your pain, but we can only take this so far and no further. All right, sir? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Hello. Yes. Good morning to you and all.
Good morning.
Yeah, that gentleman is still grieving.
Of course
he is. I didn't really talk about this, but he's still grieving, and the key word here, though, is accident. It was an accident. So, therefore, the way he put his statement to you, he said his brother was viciously killed.
No, but
and
you
that's
know.
How he's saying it, but
well,
it's not.
Let's understand what he's going through.
Mm-hmm. But to go that way in your mind, right? To take it even down a darker path so that it was he has to try to get some counsel or something so somebody can talk to the family and think about these kind of things and try to get
You know how much pain there is out there?
Pardon?
Let's move on. What did you call to talk about?
I was going to ask you if we have a like when you try a case, if these civil cases are tried here. Civil cases are tried here if you're not satisfied with what the court has done. Is there a civil suit that?
I suppose it depends upon what case you're talking about.
In the same case, people can
call
their own civil suit.
Which same case?
This gentleman here.
I don't know. I can't answer that. You said that you didn't call about this originally.
Yeah, but maybe your lawyer.
What did you call about originally? That's my question.
So I ain't allowed to touch on nothing else.
Well, I don't I don't want to pursue this particular case any further. Not here. Not in detail.
I just asked a question. So if you don't know.
I told you I don't know.
The case is in Barbados.
I told you I don't know.
Somebody to call and tell us if we can't pursue the case. These things are good to know. All right, I am concerned about the evictions going on in Barbados.
Why?
And also in the world. COVID has shown up so much good and bad. And we as human beings need to still get to where we can be kind as much as possible to others. I know landlords have problems with their tenants and everything. And I also think that the banks and other financial institutions can look at helping the Prime Minister call giving moratoriums even to the persons who are landlords and so on, so that they wouldn't be anxious to put out people because they too have their bills to pay and everything. So it's really concerning because to put out people now, this COVID can go further, right? Because people don't have places to bed and to settle down and everything. So it's not a good thing that's going on at all over America, you know. It's just a concern of mine. And the last concern, there is a war going on in Yemen. Children are starving and we aren't really hearing much about it. So I was just wondering how the reporting is done about that and so on. You hear anything about this? About it?
About what again?
There's a war going on in Yemen, and children are starving. People are homeless.
I've heard about it. People. Yemen has, in addition to the war, Yemen also has a serious problem with COVID.
Uh-huh.
The infrastructure is down. The absence of a whole set of resources, and they're not handling that well either. But the fighting continues.
Yeah. But you know, like, what concerns me a lot is, like, I didn't hear about this here, really. So it's like, normally when there's a war going on and people are starving, especially little children and everything, belly swell up big, like, years ago in Biafra, or Biafra, wherever the new place had to put called. You would hear and you would see, but this seemed to be like, it's not really publicized.
I don't agree with you. It may not be publicized on television as much as you would like,
mm-hmm.
but I've been hearing quite a lot about Yemen in the news for a while. The BBC in particular has done a lot of work, and I expect the other service that does good work on these matters is Al Jazeera. Oh. You are unlikely to see much of it on American TV because they are always consumed by Donald Trump.
Okay.
You know, but and things American, but they don't really put that amount of emphasis on those matters. Very, very parochial to a large extent. But if you...
So, with the international bodies, you think they're doing enough?
I think, well, it could never be enough. I think there has been some effort to get the United Nations to become a bit more involved in trying to deal with the problems there. You know, you see here, today's story, this is 15 hours ago, by the BBC. It says the conflict in Yemen between the Houthi group based in the north and an internationally recognized government in the south shows no signs of ceasing despite the coronavirus crisis. Nearly 6 months since coronavirus spread in Yemen, the BBC is the first international broadcaster to reach the country to see how the people are dealing with the pandemic. And it, what they have reported is not good. And you know, the crisis there is essentially a fight between Saudi Arabia on the one hand and Iran on the other.
And they're in the middle.
And they are in the middle. That's what the problem is, as has been reported, you know?
Well, this is the WHO, all the World Health Body. They need to really get to this, though, because this lady, she has 3 children, and about 2 of them are dying. And for me, it's horrible. Or ever tune in to BBC more often. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. This person says that they want me to answer this question. And they dare me to answer the question, really, first caller. Do you think that if the victim was a relative of a politician, a lawyer, especially a QC, or even a police officer, that the outcome would be the same? I dare you, Mr. Ellis, to answer this question on the air. You may refer to me as the postman. And you know, chances are that people who have money would pursue this matter further to examine the extent to which they could have recourse to a civil action because of the loss of life. I think that in general terms, you know as well as we do, that there is a criminal side and then there's a civil side. So the family is in a position where they can actually try to pursue it that way. However, I think that the person who has written it wants to know about the outcome at the criminal level. And in that regard, you're asking me to speculate. Because there are various people in this country who lose their relatives, their loved ones, in all sorts of circumstances, people who are high and low, and it does not necessarily mean that they don't end up feeling as though things have been handled badly, haven't been handled in the right way. This is a real embarrassment, I think, for those who have been involved in this matter. And as has been reported, it has implications for other cases that have gone in a similar direction. So there are other people who are likely to feel equally aggrieved at the outcome. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air?
Hello. Hi, David. Good morning.
Yes, sir.
How are you? How are you doing?
I'm okay.
It's on low key, though, Mike. I'm coming over low key. You're not upbeat at all, man.
Oh, my goodness. But you want, the truth of the matter is, I can't sound the same way every day.
Yeah,
and, you know, I need people like you to energize me.
Well, Well, I hope again, Jay-Z, this morning. Mm-hmm. You know,
look, the truth of the matter, look. If you get your first call, and your first call is on a matter such as that, will you expect me to be?
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm only human, you know.
David, agreed. I agree with you. Anyhow, look, I just got three little tidbits this morning. The early morning extract, you play business early morning.
Yeah.
And then you start the program with it again, this your program. David, you remember 9/11? Do you remember 9/11? Before 9/11, actually?
What about it?
You could not walk into various hotels across the South Coast and the West Coast and ask them for a glass of water. You could not walk in. You could not walk off the streets and ask them for a glass of water or a phone call. And when 9/11 hit, and then the same hoteliers get hit in the pocket, right? They start offering staycations.
But are you sure that we are talking about hoteliers? No. One hotel has been mentioned.
This is what I'm saying to you.
Three businesses were mentioned and only one was classified as a hotel.
You, David, don't try to defend now.
Defend?
You're the good gatekeeper.
All right, well, so be it.
I am saying to you, before 9/11, you could not go on to the hotel properties on the South Coast or West Coast to ask them for a phone call or a glass of water. Walking off the road. But then 9/11 hit and them guys get hit in the pocket, they start offering the same people, the Bajans, locals, that they may have no time for staycations. And you know what? We lapping them up. The same thing happening now, right? Now COVID and we neighborhood, we lapping up the staycations now. Anyhow, that's enough of that. I want to compliment you and Glenmore yesterday for that program. I have never in my entire life following Parliament over the years hearing Bishop Astley so upbeat and so dynamic as a speaker. David, I want to ask you this question. What did you take away from that discussion yesterday of Bishop Astley?
Well, I prefer you to tell me what you took away.
No. You can't piggyback from my comment. I want to hear from you. You're the journalist. You're more articulate than me. I want to hear David Ellis, the seasoned journalist.
Well, you know, I will give you that.
Do not piggyback from my comment.
I will give you that. But, you know,
I want to hear you.
I don't think that you can speak for Barbados, all Barbados.
No, but
you want me? You want me to answer your question? In this seat, I don't have a difficulty giving you my position, but you've declined to give me yours first. Anyhow,
No. I asked you the question.
What are the takeaways?
Let me say.
The most significant takeaway that I got from the exchange was that there was a lot of tension that existed between the now opposition leader and Ms. Motley from a previous administration. As a consequence of that, he never anticipated that he would have been in the cabinet, and he then outlined in more detail than I have had before what were some of those instances that caused the divide between the two of them. Can you turn off that phone, please? It is a bit of an irritant.
Yeah, talk to me.
Ringing in the background all the time.
Uh-huh.
All right. The other matter that I thought was important was the issue of the structure of his party and whether his party was any different in structure to what we have had before. I still don't feel that question was answered with any degree of confidence. All right, so those were my takeaways. What were yours?
Well, like I said, I have never heard Bishop Astley so dynamic yet, and I think that you and Mr. Murray bring out a public side of a hidden side of Bishop Astley.
His tone was quite upbeat and aggressive, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so. And
more so than you hear normally.
I never know the bishop to be that kind of dynamic speaker, right? So I will let that rest right there, mm-hmm. You know. I let
so you left impressed?
Pardon me?
You were impressed by him.
I did not, like I said, David, I did not know that Bishop Astley could raise to that level. And I was surprised. I was more surprised at the way how Bishop Astley was in a robust mood yesterday. Because, like I said, I never knew that he could be that type of person. However, let me move to a subject that I raised last week, Friday with you, when I asked, and I want to compliment Linda Holder from Transport Board. I think that she done what any PR people, PR person, be looking for PR people to do. However, when she gave the price of the electric bus, the electric buses, and if I want to be fair, you know, which I hope to do this morning, if the buses cost $20 million Barbados, 33 buses, I, Wesley Chandler, believe, from my standpoint, knowing the automotive industry, I think if these buses, high-tech electrical buses, cost 33 of them, it costs $20 million, I believe it is money well spent. That is me, right? But, you know, and everything else, you just only hear about certain prices. I don't know if there's some hidden price, but if that is the true cost of the 33 buses, I think it's money well spent. And they look fairly good on the road. I hope to stand the test of time. The only thing that got me worried, though, about 33 buses purchased at one time.
What's so special about that? I heard somebody else raising that.
I won't tell you, David.
How big a fleet?
I went across the length of breadth of this country, and I hear different sports people talking about, from the political directorate, that you don't buy your fleet of buses all at one time because chances are they'll be break down at the same time.
Can I ask
and
you
that
this?
Happened to be true.
Can I ask you this question?
Yeah.
What is the total fleet, the total number of buses in the fleet of the Transport Board?
David, you really asked me that?
Yes.
But David, why don't I know? I really don't know. I don't know how much buses out there per day. If you'd ask about sanitation, I could tell you.
I'm saying to you that this is only but a small part of the total fleet of the Transport Board. I don't understand this argument that you can't bring in 33 buses at one time because they can break down at one time and that sort of thing.
That is true. That is true.
But when you look at the total fleet of the Transport Board, this is part of it. So they're not bringing in the total fleet all at one time. They're replacing it all at one time.
David, I will tell you the same, man.
So I don't understand the argument.
I will say the same to you, David. Since these buses hit the road, right, 2 weeks ago, I hardly see an old stock on the road. If I see any, the most could be is two. Honest to God, check it out for yourself. I hear the fight with that, right? I'm glad to see them on the road. But you cannot dismiss that they will break down at the same time.
Well, you know, breaking down at the same time has a lot to do with maintenance as well. It does not follow that because they've all been brought in at the same time, they can all break down at the same time. You know, there are things that you can do in servicing the buses and that sort of thing.
Transport board, and you will see how much...
Yeah, that's because of neglect.
On the graveyard.
All right, but you know what that has to do with. A lot of it has to do with the neglect that we have seen over the years.
As far as I remember, Transport Board has a workshop, and they also has Yocal assisting them.
But that doesn't mean that they have worked well. You know that.
Transport Board is brain power, sir. And still the buses break down.
Well, you know, one of the questions that will have to be answered is, in light of the inefficiencies that we have had in maintaining and keeping the fleet on the road over the years, with all that has been done the access to your cow, the access to Simpson Motors and all of that. What assurance can the Transport Board give us now that something different will be done to avoid a repetition of the same situation with respect to these vehicles that have been these electric vehicles? That is the relevant question. We also need to know. We also need to know, you know, what actually is being done about UCAL. I mean, what improvements have we been able to see, if any? If there have been no improvements, what is going to be done about this entity so that we can get better value for money out of it? How much money was owed? I believe that part of what we have had out of the BERT program committed the government to paying its debts. And whether UCAL has been able to get the money that was owed to it, that was also creating a significant problem in its operations. So these are questions that still need to be answered, yes.
Good. All right, David.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program. Are you there? Okay. So we have people raising questions here about the media and how the media has handled this matter of the people who were, the business people, who were apprehended by the police, or held by the police a few days ago. I saw comments that suggested that there was one rule for the Medes and another for the Persians, as they put it. That while on the one hand, you get the faces of people being blocked from being seen by the public. On the other hand, you have people on other charges who are not given that degree of protection. And they want to know, what informs the decision of the media to handle matters in this way? And they question the degree to which we as media practitioners perpetuate this image out there that, one, people from a particular group or a particular class or a particular race are treated one way and other people are treated in another way. I think that is something that media practitioners who are involved in that kind of practice, they are the ones who need to explain it. Because, you know, a lot depends upon who is the editor on a given day. And sometimes one person as an editor will handle a matter one way, and sometimes another editor handles it in a completely different way. It is not for me to answer on their behalf, but to just point out that it has come up and we can't run away from it. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Morning, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm okay.
Okay. I called a comment about yesterday's program, the interview with Bishop Athley.
Yes.
And I would say that when he first crossed over, I didn't know what to think about him and what to make of him. He did raise some issues in the House of Assembly from time to time, like white vote and so, but he usually raised them in a soft and usually apologetic manner, as though it's taking him pain to criticize the current administration. You know he needs to raise the issue because he's the opposition leader, but then he do it in a kind of way like he don't want to. But yesterday, to me, I saw a different athlete. I think he was on the ball. The only time he was against the rails to me was with some question about structure and mm-hmm. things like that.
Yes.
But apart from that, Athley did a very good job for his party and for himself yesterday.
Perhaps so, he should be interviewed more regularly then.
I think so. Because there's so much was in there that you hardly would know if it wasn't for the interview. You know?
But that also raises the question of people who are in the cabinet of Barbados and the degree to which they need to come forward and answer questions that the public wants to hear from them on.
I think so, but sometimes that's dangerous for the party because suppose they come forward now and conflict in their
Well, they need to get they need to do their homework, and they need to make sure that they are, you know, up on the issues, because you don't believe for 1 minute that if they come to a program like this, that some of us are not going to deal with them in exactly the same way other people have been dealt with before. I mean, we vary in our styles, but I will tell you that as long as I am involved, I am going to be as consistent as I can be in the style that I have adopted over the years. So whether you like a person or dislike a person, there's an approach that has to be taken to test that person and to get the best out of them.
Right. Now, the thing I would have liked to put Mr. Affley, because I held on a long time yesterday, about an hour and a half, and still didn't get through the program, come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing I would like to put to Mr. Affley, I observe that during the 2008 election, leading up to it, Mr. Arthur was constantly pointing David Thompson, because he was the head of the opposition leader is always the head of the Public Accounts Committee.
Yes.
So he was telling David Thompson, man, you got other things to go and do. Go and deal with the Public Accounts Committee. If you think there's so much corruption and so, go through the Public Accounts Committee and show it up and bring it to justice and things. And David Thompson did not take that advice. David Thompson focused on leading the party to the election successfully. Likewise, Miss Motley didn't do a lot really as leader of the opposition with the Public Account Committee either. Miss Motley focused on becoming Prime Minister. But here it is, David and Mr. Atherley is putting in a lot of time into the Public Accounts Committee. And he's putting in time where I think it doesn't make sense, because he's talking about the last 10 years, which is more or less helping the current administration, because they like that thought. And he's talking about prosecuting people, possible prosecutors, all of that. You need, look what issues going on in the country now. Why not, Mr. Affley, focus on the current issues
such as to make a change? What are those issues that you believe he should be focused on?
Well, for right now, you have people who are unemployed.
Yes.
Mr. Franklin said last week that you used to have a year where you could apply for severance. And that's been moved from a year to 4 weeks, I think he said. But that's a big issue because the unions are not getting involved and the unions are not looking after the workers in that respect. That's a big disadvantage you are putting people at. And I think that is something more for him to focus on, rather than focusing on things that you can't change the past. Going back into the last 10 years, cannot do anything at all about us going forward.